We are entering into, or we're kind of already into, the fall season of sports. And a new study is revealing how prevalent brain injuries are, specifically in football players. According to a new study in the British Medical Journal, researchers analyzed more than 1,700 former NFL players who died between the years 2008 and 2021. They found that 338 brains were donated for examination, and among those donors, 93% had evidence of CTE. So we're talking today to Glenn Lungarini, who's one of our sports experts on the show. He's the executive director of the CIAC, which oversees high school athletics across the state. And Glenn, welcome back to the show. I so appreciate you coming on. When you see a study like this one, what does it tell you about the risks of repeated head impacts, specifically in football?
Yeah, fortunately for Connecticut and for us, we've been well ahead of the curve in looking at exposure to concussions, working collaboratively with the Connecticut State Medical Society Sports Medicine Committee for nearly 20 years now. This is a safety issue that we have addressed. We have very specific protocols put in place of how much contact time and full contact time teams can have, starting with the beginning of the year and then lessening that as we go through through the season as well. We limit the number of quarters that athletes can play, so they're not overexposing themselves to concussions as well. And there is a safety standard with our helmets, where they are recertified and reconditioned every year in both football and lacrosse, boys lacrosse. So many steps that we take to ensure the safety of our kids.
So would you say, Glenn, that parents, and I don't think the athletes worry as much, to be honest, just because we're talking about teenagers, and they just want to play. But the parents, especially the families, is it something they should be top of mind? You know, CTE, I feel like, is a diagnosis that's incredibly serious. Some people don't even realize you don't know that you even have it until after you pass away. It's not something you could diagnose while you're alive. Is it something that people should be concerned about?
I would say that it's something that, you know, we want parents to be aware of. We want them to understand the risks of concussion. At the onset of every sports season, we do have parents do a review of our concussion refresher. So it gives information of signs, symptoms, things to look for with your kids. We have specific protocols that if a kid receives a concussion, they need to clear before they come back into play, practice, participation. At the youth levels, you know, they've done a great job of limiting and not exposing kids to full contact and to the possibility of concussions until they've gone through proper skill training of how to tackle. We see a lot of flag leagues at the youth level now as well. So there's a lot of skill development happening before they hit. So I think that's a big distinction, you know, that the studies and the things that we're looking at, these are players that are elite players. They're players that are playing in college, players that are playing in the NFL, where the speed of the game, the contact, the power of the game is much different than what we see from the youth levels up through high school.
And again, we have Glenn Lungarini here, executive director of the CIAC. Would you say, Glenn, there are specific football drills or even practice habits that should be reconsidered, or do you feel like they're in a good place despite, you know, some of these recent findings with CTE?
I think as long as coaches follow the safety standards that are out there, specifically in teach and tackling, then, you know, we are in a good place with that. The key is that we're teaching kids not to lead with their head. We're teaching kids how to tackle with keeping their chin up, their head up, so that they're using their shoulder, they're using the center of their body to create that contact, teaching players at young levels how to execute those skills in a safe manner. You know, as we know, the repetition is what is going to create habit. So if we teach and we learn that pattern the wrong way, then kids are more susceptible to those injuries. So as long as we're following and teaching the proper skills, then honestly, I think football is about as safe as it's ever been.
And do you feel like there are any major misconceptions from athletes when it comes to concussions or even CTE? Like, do you feel like that gets thrown around? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, Glenn, but I feel like CTE started to become a bigger buzzword, or at least something that became very prevalent after the Aaron Hernandez documentary came out from the New England Patriots, and also the fact that he had ties to Connecticut. Like, I feel like I will hear it a lot from athletes or parents. You know, so my son plays ice hockey, and you don't really hear too much about concussions in hockey, which is hilarious because they absolutely happen. But, you know, I will hear, you know, kind of rumblings of, you know, oh, you hear about CTE, or you hear about, constant concussions, and how many are too many. Are there misconceptions that athletes or even families have about the two things?
I agree with you that it's been more prevalent in the recent past, but you know, again, unfortunately, sometimes it takes a tragedy for us to really address situations. And, you know, it's looking not only at the Aaron Hernandez, but other tragic situations that have happened with NFL players. And the more that we've had players who have passed on donate their brains to scientific research, I think there's been a lot of gains in that as well. So, listen, CTE is a very real thing. The issues that can come with multiple concussions, second onset hits, that is well documented, and it's very real. So we need to take the right precautions to protect our kids, protect our athletes, and that's what we're doing. But, you know, I don't think it's overblown. I think at least here in Connecticut, I think the doctors and medical staffs that we work with understand the seriousness of it, ensure that we have the proper protocols in place to keep it safe. But at the same time, you know, not altering the game and allowing our kids and our players to play it in a safe manner.
We're chatting with Glenn Lungarini, one of my favorite sports guys here in Connecticut. He's also the executive director of the CIAC, which oversees high school athletics across the state of Connecticut. So we're knee deep into the fall season of sports right now, Glenn. And there were a couple of actually news headlines over the past couple of weeks that I kind of kept a note of. And I thought, at some point, I'll talk to Glenn about this. And then the whole CTE thing came up. And here we go. So first and foremost, and of course, I can't find the article that I'm talking about, but maybe you could fill in the little gaps here, and I so appreciate you. There was some kind of a change this year for athletes in regards to academics, and I think it was either about grades or it might have been about coursework, credits. Am I on to anything? Am I making this up? I feel like I put this in my news a couple weeks ago.
It's all the above, but the good news, and we want to reassure athletes and their parents, there's actually no change for this year. So
okay.
The law that was passed and that we're looking at goes into effect July 1 of 2027. And that was important as we worked with our legislators that we needed to provide time for our school districts to understand what this regulation was going to be. And we needed some time with our member schools, our principals and our ADs looking at what our new standard is going to develop into. So we do have a committee that begins meeting this fall, and we should wrap up our work by the end of October, and we will have a new academic eligibility standard that will go into effect July 1, 2027.
Okay, that's good to know. The other thing I was reading about, in fact, I think this was brand new this week in CT Insider. It says the CIAC football entering year 9 of the Connecticut High School Football Alliance, which I don't know what that is, so I'm going to have you kind of tell me what that is. It says for the first time since the scheduling model matches schools of like size and ability from different conferences sprung up in 2017, all 8 Connecticut football leagues are now aboard. So talk to me about this.
Yeah, so the Football Alliance has been doing a lot of good work for, about 9 years now. This started with the Southern Connecticut Conference, the FCAC in Fairfield, and the Southwest Conference, where they were really having trouble scheduling non-league games that were competitive. So these those leagues got together and started scheduling non-league games with each other by matching size of school within divisions and competitiveness as well. That has now grown across the state, where every league is now a part of this, which is really exciting. So what we're getting is some very competitive non-league games that give teams exposure and experience in their divisional play, as well as they look at their state championship aspirations. And the work of the Football Alliance has just been tremendous. We support them 100% and are grateful for the work that those commissioners and ADs are doing.
And what about outside of football? I was reading, I think this was over the summertime, like I said, I've tried to keep little articles, but it was saying that during the 2025-26 school year, 67 schools won over 130 CIAC team state titles, which is pretty good. Greenwich leading the state with 14 championships for the fourth consecutive year. Any, I would say, predictions, standout teams, standout towns, cities that you're keeping an eye on for this year? I mean, I think that first of all, those numbers are very impressive for last year. But any goals or anything that you have your sights kind of set on for this upcoming school year?
No, you know, I think one of the changes in the last 3 years that has made a significant difference is the ability for coaches to work with their kids in the summer. So we are seeing our schools and areas where kids maybe don't have the time or the resources to participate in AAU or, you know, some of the more expensive club teams, are still able to access skill development and access coaches. So the level of play, the level of skill development that we see across the state, I think is reacting positively to those changes. And that's the great thing about high school sports is, you know, hey, you play the game and you never know day to day, you know, who's going to win and who's going to come out on top. So, you know, certainly there are favorites based on returning players and, you know, some talent levels. But that's the great thing about high school sports. On any given day, anybody has the opportunity for that big win.
Yeah, so true. Well, Glenn Lungarini, I so appreciate you and the entire team for the CIAC for what you do. High school athletes, we all appreciate you. And I always look forward to whenever I get to have you on the show. Thank you so much for talking sports with us. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Melissa. Thank you. Have a great day.
Yes, you too. Glenn Lungarini again of the CIAC right here on WICC.